Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I always appreciate you guys joining me. In just a moment, I'm going to be joined by the fellas from the Paul Farrington Show. Going to be a fun episode today. Had a great conversation with those guys. As always, they got the upper hand this week. Vikings got a big win against Detroit. The Packers did not against Carolina, but still a very fun conversation. And we start looking ahead to this upcoming week as well, which is a moving week in the NFC. A lot of huge games. We talk about that as well. We'll get there momentarily. Just want to shout out our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Sulky Virus, Preston Pagel, and Chris White. Thank you guys so much for signing up. Appreciate you a ton. We've also got a NFL trade deadline to cover. Now, not super unexpectedly, the Green Bay Packers did not make any trades at the trade deadline. I think there's a couple reasons for this. Obviously, number one, they made a lot of moves, or made one major move already for Micah Parsons, trading away two future first-round picks plus Kenny Clark to go get Micah Parsons. But there were some other things at play here. First of all, the two big moves, Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams getting traded away from the Jets, immediately made me, I don't want to say feel better about the Micah Parsons trade, but it just reiterated how great of a deal that was. I love Quinnen Williams and I love Sauce Gardner. And to me, we're not talking about a player in the same echelon as Micah Parsons. And I know maybe that's blasphemous because Sauce is one of the best. I'd rather have the premium pass rusher. And so when you see two firsts plus Adonai Mitchell going to, you know, the Jets from Indianapolis for Sauce Gardner, it's basically the same trade package. And for me, I would much rather have Micah. I know there's a little contract difference there and things like that that goes into it. Still, give me Micah 100 times out of 100. And then a first and a second, plus, you know, Mazi Smith, their former first-round pick, which is a throw-in. I don't know that anyone was even going to give like a six-round pick for him, honestly. He struggled that much. But even still, you're giving a huge cost to give, you know, to get Quinnen Williams. You're just better off sticking with Micah Parsons in that situation. So a lot of big-time deals for two players. Again, I really like that's not to crap on Sauce Gardner or Quinnen Williams, but two overpays, in my opinion. Two great deals for the Jets. And I know it's going to be tough to lose two players of that ilk and then get worse and worse before you get better. I still thought it was the right move, and I thought they got great value in both of those trades. But it just, again, should be a reminder for Packers fans. Even if you liked the value for Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams, again, Micah should be more valuable. And the fact that the Packers didn't have to give basically more than those trades, just a little bit more than the Quinnen Williams trade, is really remarkable. And again, should just reiterate how great of a deal that was for Green Bay. I think the next thing that we have to talk about there is this was clearly a seller's market. And Goody, I'm sure, was looking for ways to improve the team and keep an eye and, you know, making phone calls and things like that. He is not a GM that is going to overpay. Maybe when it comes to free agency, we can talk about that a little bit. But when it comes to trades, he's not going to overpay for market value. You know, if there's a trade that makes sense, like in Micah Parsons' situation, that one clearly made sense. But when you see all the deals that took place, this was a seller's market. And I don't think Goody had much interest in getting involved in anything. And there wasn't a single deal that I saw that I'm like, yeah, if I were a team, I would love to have done that deal. The Rasheem Shaheed trade, or Rasheem Shaheed is a pretty solid trade for Seattle. Green Bay clearly didn't need that type of wide receiver. That's not what they were shopping for, right? I thought there were some cornerback trades that took place earlier. Brownlee from the Jets a couple weeks back, I thought was worthwhile. There've been a couple like that, you know, a couple weeks prior to the deadline that maybe could have made some sense, especially at corner, but nothing that actually took place at the deadline. So I can understand why it does leave them a little bit thin at corner. It does leave them a little bit thin at that tight end position. Would I have liked to have seen something at either of them? Yeah, probably. But if there's just nothing, you know, nothing out there and teams aren't willing to deal at a reasonable price, sometimes you have to deal with what you have. Green Bay still has a pretty loaded deck. I know even sans Tucker Kraft, but they're going to have to figure out ways to improve some of those issues that they have right now, including corner, offensive line, maybe some defensive tackle depth, things like that, the tight end that we talked about, with just the players that they have already on the roster, except maybe for corner. Now, Easton Butler has reported this a while back. Matt Schneidman reported it. Justice Mosqueda is now reporting it as well. The Packers have sincere interest in Asante Samuel Jr. That's an interesting one. And I know some of you are immediately thinking, Andy, you said all off, you had no interest in Asante Samuel Jr. Now you do. Well, what, he hasn't played. What changed? Well, the reason I didn't initially like the idea of Asante Samuel Jr., one is because he was coming off the, you know, major neck injury, which always is a little bit cause for concern. Now that he's cleared and back and he took the time that he needed to get healthy, that is a little bit different. That's not the main reason, though. But the injury at the time certainly was a factor. The other thing is, I didn't think he was a perfect fit. And more importantly, he's a terrible tackler. Just a terrible, terrible tackler. If you're a team that wants to keep everything in front of you and rally and tackle, having a terrible tackler in your defensive backfield doesn't make a ton of sense. All right, so clearly he didn't get better as a tackler. So now why are you interested? Well, I didn't, again, love the film of Asante Samuel Jr. when I watched it, you know, in the you know, free agency period of who Green Bay might sign. I've also watched the film of Nate Hobbs and Keyshawn Nixon and, to some lesser extent, Carrington Valentine, and I don't love what I'm seeing from Green Bay either. And so, yeah, take your shot. Give it a chance. I'm not certainly going to be upset by that. Bring in more competition. Maybe it lights a fire under the guys that you have. Or maybe Asante Samuel comes in knowing he's got a couple months to on a prove-it deal before he hits free agency next year and really tries to cash in and gives it everything he has for a couple months to try to win a Super Bowl. And not only that, but get a huge payday come this offseason. So sure, why the heck not? Do I still think it's a perfect 1A fit? No, probably not. But right now, again, based on the choices that you have, I'm all in. Sign me the hell up. Give me Asante Samuel Jr. and add some competition to this group. So if it ends up happening, it would be great. I don't know if it solves all the problems, but it gives you a good cover player that plays primarily on the outside. And right now, Green Bay can use as many good cover players that play anywhere on defense that they can possibly find. And with the trade deadline gone, no other free agents out there, no real prospects on your practice squad or other teams' practice squads to pick up, and two corners behind your top three that have never played an NFL snap, and three corners that, I think Valentine's played better as of late, but the other two are struggling a lot at the moment. All right, well, who's going to say no at this point? Of course, give it a shot, and I'd be all in. We'll see if Green Bay can maybe seal that deal at some point. He does have that connection with Packers passing game coordinator Derek Ansley in the defensive backfield coaching room, and that could very well be a connection there. But it makes all the sense for Samuel, right? He's got the connection with the defensive backs, coach in Derek Ansley. He wants a starting spot. Green Bay can give it to him. And, he probably wants a chance to compete as well if you're going to come back at this point of the year. So Green Bay kind of gives him everything he's probably looking for. I'm sure money probably pays a little bit of a factor in there as well. But we'll see if, Green Bay is willing to up the offer to get a really good corner in the door. But that's probably Green Bay's last chance to add any sort of significant piece to this roster now that the free agency period is over. Unless we get some veteran releases like a Whitney Mercilus back in the day or things like that. Jared Valdir, I think, was kind of like that. But barring anything like that, this might be Green Bay's last shot to put something of any sort of significance onto this roster the remainder of this actual season until you get to the offseason. Green Bay did not sit on their hands all day, though, during the trade deadline. They did make multiple transactions, including putting Tucker Kraft on IR, ending his season, which we knew about already. Josh Wiley, the tight end who was on the practice squad, is now on the 53. Fun receiving tight end when they signed him to the practice squad. I really like that. I think he has upside. I really liked him coming out. Receiving tight end type a little bit more. I mean, don't get your hopes up, but as far as bringing a guy off of your practice squad in early November to add to your active roster, I think Josh Wiley is about as good of a prospect / athletic profile that you could hope for at this point in time to add to your 53. They also signed tight end McAllen Castles and tight end Drake Dabney to the practice squad. So two new practice squad tight ends. Aaron Mosby went from the practice squad to the 53. He was out of practice squad elevations, so he's now officially on the 53, core special teamer for them the last few weeks. Christian Welch, they released him the other day. He does get back to the practice squad. They have three call-ups with him still. They signed him to the active, so that was not a practice squad call-up. So he does still have three call-ups. We easily could continue to see that for the next 3 weeks as they are, again, trying to figure out what to do with that, you know, Nick Neiman spot while he is on injured reserve. And then they also added wide receiver Michael Woods to the practice squad and released offensive lineman Lasita Smith from the practice squad. Those were the big moves of the day. No big transactions for Green Bay from a trade standpoint, but they did make 8 different roster moves on the course of the day. So we do have a little bit of an updated roster there. Now it's time to talk to Paul and Ziggy. Let's get after it.
Welcome into Behind Enemy Lines, a collaboration between the Paul Farrington Show and the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Paul Farrington joined by Robert Ziggy Ziegler up at Harvard University and Andy Herman out in Green Bay, right? Andy, you're in Green Bay, Wisconsin?
Just north, but yeah, we'll count it.
Just north, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, we're going to be very respectful to Andy today. A lot of people were looking forward to this show with the give and take that we have, but, you know, we've been there. We've been there, Andy, where you're at this week. Going to say, a little surprised at the way that we got to the standings of this week, but it's still Packers, Lions, Bears, and Vikings, as Ziggy said when I was talking to him before the show. We had the standings we all expected, but maybe got there in a different path this weekend. Sorry about the loss to the Panthers. I just want to open up with that. You said you wouldn't be here, but we're happy you're here.
You know, for sure. A couple things. I definitely get to eat crow today, especially after the comment of what's going to happen. Are the Packers going to lose more games? Are the Vikings going to win more games the remainder of the season? Well, so far it's even. It's even through 1 week. We're tied still, so it's still an interesting question, but for a lot different reasons than what I expected it to be. Secondly, owe you guys a debt of gratitude. Without you guys, this division looks a lot different. That week one win against the Bears and that week against the Lions this past week, very important in the NFC North. Now, you guys have a right to be in the conversation too, right there with the rest of the NFC North, basically. I know it's in fourth place, but that's very, very tight. But from a Packers point of view, strictly speaking, if right now you don't win those two games, yes, you guys are at 2-6, and it would suck for you guys or then basically out of it. But the Bears are at 6-2, the Lions are at 6-2, and the Packers are in third place at 5-2-1. So congratulations to you guys. I did not see that coming. We talked about the ultimate, you know, hope and lottery ticket that is JJ taking that one step forward and seeing what's next. And there was obviously a little bit more of that this past week, which I'm sure you guys will talk about. But yeah, it definitely helped Green Bay and more so than I expected it to need to after a pretty brutal loss to the Panthers.
Well, that's what we're here for, Andy. We're here to make the Packers' lives a little bit easier, aren't we?
All I'm saying is there's only one team that's 2-0 in the NFC North, and like we all expected, it's the Minnesota Vikings.
I'm just looking right now, guys, the standings around the leagues, division by division. So the Vikings are in last right now, 4-4. Every other division, Giants 2-7, Saints 1-8. You know, the Cardinals are 3-5 with their win last night. You go to the AFC, Jets 1-7, Browns 2-6, Titans 1-8, Raiders 2-6. It's amazing how competitive, as we kind of expected coming into the year, but the North is just, it's just been an unbelievable division. And even though it is competitive the way we expected, I do think it's been a weird path, kind of like we said off the top of the show. You know, the Vikings have had some really low lows this year. The Packers have had probably the highest highs in the league. And now here we are again with this Panthers loss, and we're going to get to that second. We'll start with the Vikings and the Vikings. Yeah, I think there's the only word is kind of shocking, right? A shocking 27-24 win over the Lions. Andy, Ziggy and I watched it at a Vikings bar, actually up in Boston. Our buddy, who's also a Vikings fan, does some game day operations for a bar. And it was just awesome. Like, I mean, for any game to be there, cheering on a win over Detroit, where we haven't won there since 2021. Kevin O'Connell had never gone into Detroit and won. And J.J. McCarthy didn't have a perfect day by any means. Maybe you can even say didn't have a great day. But for someone coming back from injury with the way he looked weeks 1 and 2, I have to say I'm really encouraged. Like, I'm very content with Vikings football this week after writing the season off a couple days ago.
Just really quick, because I want to hear Ziggy's take on it. This is what sucks, because normally what I would say in that situation, oh, a Vikings bar, is that it was perfect because you guys were the only two there. And I can't even say anything this week because you guys have the win and the Packers have the loss. So Ziggy, continue.
Oh, no. Well, Paul and I were joking before this game, maybe we should show up in funeral attire because that's what I thought was going to happen to the Minnesota Vikings this week. And I'm eating a little bit of crow, too, which is weird because my team won. But I said last week on the show, no matter how the Vikings looked, I would say the season is over. And look, I'm still not convinced the season is on. But if the goal was for J.J. McCarthy to play well and see some improvement from him, I'm still not convinced the defense can play up to this level. I'm not convinced that we're going to be able to beat tough teams on the road every single week. But it's undeniable that with respect to the goal of the season that I set last week, this is a huge improvement from what we saw. And it's a huge improvement even from what we saw from Carson Wentz a few weeks ago. It hasn't been a lot of J.J. McCarthy playing well enough to win football games. He did it for one quarter against the Bears and did not do it at all against the Falcons. At least for this week, J.J. McCarthy played well enough for us to win. And even if I'm not sold on the season, and I'm glad the Vikings didn't make any big moves to the deadline, I've got to be happy with that, right, Paul?
Yeah, I think we have to be pretty thrilled. And I won't go so far. I know I'm usually a little bit more intense with my reactions than you are, Ziggy. I'm not coming on here today and being like, J.J. McCarthy's the savior. The Super Bowl is back on, or if it ever was. I think it's actually kind of malpractice for media people to come out and off one game say someone is the franchise quarterback or not this early into a career. But yeah, it was definitely the best game J.J. McCarthy's played. And I think you saw, I forgot I actually picked the Vikings in our game picks. Now, was that a like complete belief in the Vikings? Not really, but I guess I'll take the win there. But you did see the impact of those guys returning from injury. And that's something that not a lot of people outside of Vikings fans have been talking about. With Darrisaw and O'Neal were awesome. You know, Aiden Hutchinson did not have a big impact on the game. And he's someone who could just absolutely, I mean, what he would have done to our backups, I don't even want to think about what would have happened to J.J. Van Ginkel comes back, and he didn't have a huge day on the stat sheet, but just watching that game clearly made an impact. Aaron Jones was really good in his return, and all those pieces coming back, I mean, showed how good this Vikings team is top to bottom, and you really just need J.J. to kind of keep it all together, and he was able to do that, making up big plays. So I really do think that with the Ravens game coming up, once again, I'm circling that game and going, all right, if they win this, now if they beat Detroit and Baltimore back-to-back, my mindset will change. But where we are today, like, I feel pretty good as far as, yes, the goal of let's just be competitive throughout the rest of the year with J.J.
And I think the cool thing with J.J. too, from, you know, your perspective, obviously, and just NFL perspective as well, he's 22 years old, yeah. And you know, it's so difficult to come into this league. I know it's year two. I know there's high expectations being a top 10 draft pick, but to be anywhere near a complete quarterback at age 22 in the NFL is so insanely hard. And so the mindset almost has to become, are there those signs there? And then can you just, you know, take incremental steps in every game kind of moving forward? If J.J. McCarthy has that game that he has on Sunday, I mean, you get the win, right? But if it's like year six in the league, you're like, ooh, not sure that that's going to ultimately be the answer. In his third start ever, where you're going in a very hostile environment on the road, playing in Detroit and having those moments like that and a couple have to have it moments, that just, again, changes the viewpoint for now to say, all right, I can see some of the vision. I can see what it can become. A lot of areas that still need cleaning up, understandably, because again, 22 years old in his third start, but man, I think you still have to have some level of, you know, at least again, vision of what it can become just even based on that game alone.
Yeah. I think it's so crazy. It really is crazy when you kind of reflect on it, just, you know, how polar the reactions are off of a good or a bad game. When you said it, Andy, he's 22 years old. You know, I put out a reel and it was me saying how clear of a mistake it was this year for the Vikings to not extend Darnold or to not go with Daniel Jones, and that JJ was a big mistake. And I didn't mean it in the sense of long term. I meant for this season alone. And I still stand by that, but it's just, you know, I told Ziggy before I posted it, I don't want to put this out there. If JJ plays well, like, the whole narrative changes. We decide to put it out there, you know, JJ wins the game, and a couple people are like, really? How are you feeling about that now, Paul? But you just can't, you can't freak out after a couple games. And if we get blown out by the Ravens next week and JJ throws two interceptions and looks horrible, everybody's going to come back out and say, this is the Atlanta JJ McCarthy. Here we go again. And it's just kind of like, all right, let's just take a breath and, you know, let's look at the season as a collective, maybe late December, early January here when we're winding down. But I will say the highs are a lot more fun than the lows. It's way more fun to be like season Super Bowl's on than wow, we have a bust pick here. I actually thought he played pretty well. I know, Ziggy, you said you didn't think he had a great game, but all things considered, I was impressed with JJ, and he really does have a pretty unbelievable mental side of it. Like, I know people talk about the moxie and they talk about him meditating before games, but he's a tough guy to rattle. And I love watching him come into the locker room after the game, and he just looks like a man possessed. The whole team clearly loves him. He's easily got the leadership attributes down. And I'm really excited for the next couple of weeks and hoping to see him continue to improve here.
Yeah, well, I certainly remember the last time we went into Detroit and lost 31-9 behind 160 passing yards and what felt like 20 sacks from Sam Darnold. You can see from this game why the Vikings believe in JJ McCarthy. Going into Detroit, which plenty of people now say, as weird as it is the single hardest place to play in the NFL, and coming out with two touchdowns, I think the consistency was lacking. You know, some of his throws were behind receivers. There were certainly questionable calls. But to open that game that way and put the Minnesota Vikings in a position where we can look back and say to the defense, if you guys can hold the Lions just enough, right? We don't have to only hold them to one touchdown, which is what we would have needed to win the last time we were in Detroit. JJ McCarthy can get a touchdown in the third quarter. He can take care of a field goal when we need it. Like, just being able to play in that sort of environment, Andy, like you said, the job's not finished. There's a lot of development we need from JJ McCarthy, and I too wouldn't be happy if this is what we saw in year six. But I was looking for any sign to believe that JJ McCarthy could be it for Minnesota Vikings. And I've got the sign now, right? This was a good game, and it was better than the Chicago game where it was just one quarter of good play. This was some consistency.
I actually didn't even think the story was JJ, though. Andy, I don't know how much of the game you were tuned into because the Packer game was on at the same time. And
I did rewatch a little bit of it, yep.
I have to imagine you're looking at the score going like, what the hell is going on over there? We extended to a 10-point lead at one point. I thought the defense was actually the story of the game for Minnesota. What a rebound from the Chargers just a week before.
Yeah, no, I thought so too. Just to go back to JJ for a moment. Yeah. JJ's got the mentality, and I don't say this as like it's a derogatory way in any way, shape, or form. If he was like 1-for-17 with 7 interceptions and took 10 sacks, but somehow the Vikings defense kept it to a 6-point game, and JJ McCarthy's taking the field for the final drive, as the opposing team are like, he's going to go down and score a touchdown and win the game. it could be like, and he's, because he's still just got like that eye of the tiger and just like, I'm going to find a way to win this damn game. And he probably will. Like, it's just that's the type of mentality, for better or worse, that he has. It's a crazy confidence. And like, you know, one of the stats I'm sure you guys know of going into that game is like, he doesn't lose in Michigan. And you're like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And then like, this is a little bit different. And then he goes in just like, all right, yeah, I guess he just doesn't lose in Michigan. It's really remarkable of just like, I don't know that all the pieces are quite there. It doesn't totally align the right way, but there's just something about him at the same time that you're just like, I don't have any desire to kind of go against them for whatever reason. So it's an interesting dynamic. And yes, I thought the defense bounced back in a pretty significant way. Listen, that Lions offense is not a fun day at the park, no matter what you have going on, no matter what injuries you have or they have. And to slow them down as much as Minnesota did, get some key stops at the end. And then going back to McCarthy getting a huge completion at the end to kind of seal that thing away. It was a moment that this season felt, and was, I certainly talked about last week, felt like it was on the brink of just House of Cards collapsing. And to have an extremely, like, one of the worst opponents that you could have to go up against in their house in that moment where things are just on the brink of like one more loss and this thing might collapse, and to go in there and get the win, I thought it was masterful, really, by, you know, Kevin O'Connell. But the defense and offense and JJ McCarthy stepping up to get that win, it kept the season alive. And I guess I did not see that coming.
Who would have thought that looking at the rushing, the Vikings go for 142 on the ground and the Lions have 65 yards. Jahmyr Gibbs, 25 yards on 9 carries. Like, that to me was the pressure on Goff was consistently there all game. They sacked him 5 times, had 11 QB hits. It was, yeah, I mean, just like Kevin O'Connell, Brian Flores was also great in this game. And I thought that was actually a big win too for us, Ziggy, because in recent games against Detroit, it's felt like Campbell and their coaching staff have just been better than we have, that we haven't been prepared. There are a lot of, we always talk about how the Lions are ready to go every single week. You know, we got punched in the mouth on that first drive. I thought it was a great response from the whole team across the board to not let that completely deflate you. You know, they convert a 4th down touchdown to Laporta where he drags 3 Vikings into the end zone. It's like, okay, here we go again. I was so impressed with it. It really was a season-saving win and just has you feeling great for next week against Baltimore. But that's sort of what we do. We do things like this. We'll win this game, make you believe. Just can't let it go easily.
Well, this to me felt like the Frank Ragnow game for Detroit, where you're just desperate for a center who can head up there and call out all the crazy stuff Brian Flores is doing. It's hard for me not to think this absence played a part, especially if Dan Campbell announcing today that they're not bringing Frank Ragnow back. Like, I don't even know where that story is coming from. But this is the first time we've been able to actually get after Jared Goff and hit him to limit that running game. And this is who the Minnesota Vikings were supposed to be. Right. In the best case scenario at the start of the season, it's you're throwing the ball to Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Aaron Jones, TJ Hawkinson. Your defense can limit the opposing offense and we can make up for a mistake or two. You just have to make enough plays with our elite players that anything can happen. And with not everything there for Detroit, and I know they got even more injuries on the offensive line in the secondary during the game, it's nice to be able to take advantage of something like that for once, rather than it being our offensive line that's totally banged up that every other team just rushes their guys at.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, it's time to start getting ready for Week 10. We've got a huge one Monday night, Philly coming to Green Bay. This should be a huge opportunity for Green Bay, and I'm expecting a heavy dose of Josh Jacobs in what hopes to be a bounce-back win for Green Bay. Elsewhere in Week 10, I'm going with big games from Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and Quinshon Judkins. The best part, Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least 2 player stats, and if you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the Power Play. No matter your play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today. Use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Pre-Alcohol. ZBiotics pre-alcohol prebiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/Packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code Packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/Packaday and use the code Packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code Packaday.
It's also got to make you feel a little better, Andy, too. Detroit feels vulnerable in a way that they haven't in a couple of years, right? Like, I've always said the Lions kind of felt inevitable playing the Vikings, that they were just going to find a way to win if they weren't kicking our ass already. This is the first time to me now where I'm like, okay, they got to pull it together. They've lost a handful here of their last, what, three of the last four? Is that the case? Or at least two of the last three? And, you know, the offense does not look the same. The defensive injuries are piling up. It's a weird spot in the North where you guys at the top, you know, I still think everyone expects you to be the two battling it out at the end. But there's definitely some red flags that make at least the guys like the Vikings and Bears fans go like, well, if things really break right, maybe.
Yeah, the Lions seem more vulnerable than normal, which would make me super happy, save for the fact that now the Packers seem more vulnerable than I would like them to feel as well. But yeah, it does feel, I mean, the whole, we've talked about it all season, the whole NFL feels wide open, but the whole NFC feels wide open as well. I mean, this conference right now is insane in the fact that you guys are in 10th place in the NFC at 4-4.
Yeah.
And the first place team is at 6-2. Like the difference between 10th and first is two games at the moment, which I get, two games is not a, you know, it's still a decent amount in a 8-game stretch or whatever, but it's really not that much in the scheme of things, and everything is stacked up. And you go one more week, like kind of some of the stuff that happened last week. I mean, we've got some big time games this week too, that I'm sure we're going to discuss, that are going to change some of the standings, including obviously Philly and Green Bay on Monday Night Football. The Buccaneers, I think, have the Patriots. I know that, is it 49ers Rams this week as well? I think, yes. Maybe 49ers. Yeah. So like, there's going to, again, be some big time movement in the NFC standings this week. And the teams that come out on top are going to position themselves, and the teams that don't are going to take that step back. You guys obviously have a big game with Baltimore as well. It doesn't look like it, maybe from a record standpoint, but that it's not a playoff elimination game, but it almost feels a little bit like kind of an elimination game, or at least the odds just get stacked completely out of your favor. You know, if the Vikings go to 4-5, it certainly pushes them back quite a bit. And then if the Ravens fall to 3-6, that really puts them behind the eight ball. So there's some really fun games this week, but yeah, the whole NFC just feels so stacked together right now.
Was that an Andy Herman lead pipe lock Vikings one seed I heard? Is that where you're going with this?
Not quite.
It's weird too, because I don't even know, after this kind of game, I just don't know what to believe, right? We get basically demolished by the Chargers in one of the biggest straight up ass whoopings you'll see, and then we come back and win in Detroit, and it's like, all right, what is this team? And I guess you feel the same way. We can start talking about the Packers here. What's going on with them, Andy? That was the question that I was talking with Ziggy. I don't know if there's definitely not just one answer, but this is just one of the most perplexing teams that I can remember. Like, I feel like I'm in the twilight zone of us coming on here and being like, yeah, that would be crazy if they lost to the Browns. Oh, that would be crazy if they lost to the Panthers. And it's just, what's going on?
Yeah, there's a good, bad, ugly side of this.
Yeah.
The good news, we'll start with the good, and then we'll face the more obvious facts and the bad and the ugly. We'll start with the good news. And I was thinking about this today. They've played 8 games. To me, maybe I'm in no man's land with this, but I do legitimately think this is the case. In the game where they took the field, they were the better team in all 8 games. I don't know if that's even better or worse, but in all 8 games that they played, they were the better team. They beat Detroit, Washington pretty easily. They were clearly better than Cleveland and shot themselves in the foot a billion times, especially at the end of that game. Very much felt like they were the better team than Dallas. Dallas might have outplayed them for a decent stretch of that game. I still felt very clearly that Green Bay was the better team. They were better than Cincy, better than Arizona, better than Pittsburgh. And to me, even though I thought Carolina played phenomenal in this game, I thought Carolina outplayed them in this game, I thought Green Bay was the better team. I still did. So there's yet to be a game where I go out there and be like, they're not in the same league as the other team, or they shouldn't have won. I thought they were the better. And honestly, they're about maybe 3 to 4 plays away from being 8-0 on the season, and we're probably looking at this team in a totally different light. That's maybe some of the good news. The bad news is obviously that they didn't win despite being the best team in all 8 games. They lost to the Browns, which looks really ugly the more that this goes on. They lost to the Panthers, which the Panthers, I think, are a little bit better than I know I expected, and I think a lot of people expected, but still not a great loss. If it's in Carolina, maybe it's one thing, but especially with it being in Green Bay. That's not great. And then the tie against Dallas looks really poor as well. And then beyond that, just feels like even in the games against Cincinnati, Arizona, it just feels like things are a little bit off. It's not clicking the way that you would want. And the defense, to an extent, is fine, but not maybe as explosive, dynamic playmaking as you would expect. This past week, they had three negative plays, a sack fumble, which actually resulted in a positive play.
Chuba,
because
right?
The fumble got advanced forward. So really only two. One tackle for loss by Micah and an interception by Xavier McKinney. That was it. No other pass breakups, no other tackles for loss, no other anything, no other negative plays on the day. And they're just not generating those explosives. And on offense, it just feels like they can't find their identity and they certainly can't run the ball, and the offensive line isn't as good. And then the ugly side is, of course, on top of that, losing Tucker Kraft for the season, who looked like one of the best tight ends in football, one of the best playmakers in football, and really one of the guys that with teams playing a bunch of too high, you know, safeties against them, that you can get him the ball and he can run after the catch and do a lot of things on his own without having to scheme much up for him. Just get him the ball and he can go. And now you completely lose that as well. So it's just disjointed. It's not consistent. They're not playing complementary football. There's reasons to still be optimistic, but it's been much more of a struggle than I think a lot of people expected.
Ziggy, didn't you have your the question you were excited to ask Andy?
I'm not sure I'm excited to ask this, but since we're here,
yeah, not excited.
You're bringing up Tucker Kraft. What's the bigger loss for the Green Bay Packers? The loss to the Panthers or Tucker Kraft?
A billion times over Tucker Kraft. It's not even remotely close. Like, I think for the most part, this gets interesting now because this Philly game looks really, like, if all of a sudden they lose to Philly, like, things start getting really dicey. Murky. Really fast. Of like, you better start winning some games. Like, playoffs is not all of a sudden guaranteed. The NFC North is very tight. Like, you're gonna have to work for this thing. So this becomes a very interesting game. But to me, this is still a team that, again, even beyond this, I think has some Super Bowl equity. And when you lose one of your top players, that equity just takes a huge hit because it takes everything to kind of go right for you to reach the promised land and win the game. And when you lose one of your best players and that you know that they're not going to be there for the playoffs, that's just a stab in the heart. So no, I would have rather have lost this game by 1,000 than to lose Tucker Kraft. It's a heartbreaker.
You know, I'm just looking over. I went back and rewatched the game this morning and jotted down like key moments and stuff like that. And it just feels like over and over again, when we're talking about the negative side of Green Bay on this show, we're just saying like, yeah, you said it too, right? Three or four plays away from maybe being undefeated. But in this game, you know, Savion Williams fumbles on the opening drive. And who knows, if you score there, maybe it opens the
different
floodgates.
Game.
Yeah, I believe it would have been. You drive down to the red zone again and you have two false starts and a big sack, right? Both of Carolina's drives are extended by touchdown drives are extended by penalties on third downs where it looks like you would have gotten a stop. It's just kind of these, you know, you miss another kick. These things keep piling up for Green Bay. And at some point, I'm wondering where, like, are you still looking at this as, oh, we clean this up and we're the best team in football? Or are you at the point now where you're like, this might just be who we are?
This is going to sound so lame. And I really don't mean this to be like the analytical point that maybe it comes across as. I do think sometimes football just has some pure, stupid, dumb luck to it. And like right now, like turnovers, like come in bunches, they come in. The Green Bay is losing the turnover battle, or at least breaking even in a lot of these games, and they're not winning it. And like I said, they arguably are this close to being, you know, whether it's undefeated or whatever, even where they're at right now, 5-2-1, while not playing their best football, shooting themselves in the foot, not making their kicks, and not, again, not even coming close to like winning the turnover battle by one, much less two or three. If all of a sudden they start getting turnovers and making their kicks and not shooting themselves in the foot, I still think this is a massively dangerous team.
Yeah.
And I hope that happens when you need it most. Like even right now, when you face Green Bay, even with them shooting themselves in the foot and even with them not making their kicks and not getting turnovers, it's still not a picnic to play them. Nobody's beat them by more than 3 points. And it's the weirdest teams, again, that have done it. But the two losses are by 3 points and they tied a game. And like, so nobody's like come in and be like, oh yeah, we can get right through Green Bay. They're still difficult to play and they're not even remotely playing their best football. So the two sides of it is if this just is who they are, well, then they're dead on arrival for any sort of postseason success. There's no chance of anything, right? If they actually show signs of growth and take the steps that they need to, and again, maybe get some of that just dumb turnover luck alongside of it, well, then yeah, all of a sudden things are going to start changing pretty ridiculously in their favor and probably beating some teams that they need to beat to maybe go on a run. I joked this week, and I'm not even joking about it. Of the next two games, Philly at home and at New York Giants, I'm more scared of at New York Giants than I am of Philly at home, because they're probably going to show up well for Philly at home in a big game, Monday Night Football, big high intensity. That's when they play well. It's the Giants game on the road. They'll probably lose by 12. That's how I feel right now.
Well, the thing to me that I know the Packers need to get it in line more, but it seems to me that all of this starts with Jordan Love. A lot of Packers fans are mad at LaFleur, and I can't blame them. But watching this game back, it felt like a lot of that, we're better than them, we don't have to play our best football, we'll just take care of business and do it, came from Jordan Love, especially as the game went on. And I feel like I haven't seen this from him much before, but some of those throws in the third and fourth quarter, it felt like he was on tilt, right? Like he'd had a terrible river in a poker game. He's just like, I'm going to throw into triple coverage. I'm going to throw this crazy throw into the end zone on fourth down and see what happens. And if you want to be a quarterback good enough to win three or four playoff games in a row, he's got to figure out how to get that under control. Because with Favre, I know Packers fans have done this ride before, but it felt like that was just who he was. When Love is out here making these crazy throws, more than I think even some of those Favre years, I'm just sitting back wondering, like, what are you doing?
Well, I saw somebody tweet this week. I wish I remembered who it was so I could, you know, give them credit for it. But they tweeted out, like, Jordan doesn't throw a lot of interceptions, but when he does, they're some of the dumbest, ugliest looking interceptions that you have ever possibly seen. And this went right along with that, where you're looking at that. You're like, what was it? It just was predetermined is ultimately what it was. Like they clearly, you know, he clearly went into that play being like, I'm taking the shot down the field to Christian Watson. And it was in the wind. The safety that's on that actually ends up picking it off, Merrig, was not even really supposed to be involved in it, but there's no other player to kind of take Merrig. So it's really like ends up being a triple covered play, and the wind knocks the ball down and Merrig just fields it, as Jordan Love appropriately said, you just basically fielded it like a punt, yeah. You know, just could fair catch that thing back there. So just an ugly decision and a really ugly throw on top of it. So it's unfortunately that double negative did not result in a positive. I think the bigger thing, as you're alluding to here, Ziggy, is there has to be a level of patience that he can go into a drive with or in a game with, and just says, I know that this offense and Jordan like to be aggressive in throwing down the field. And if you have the opportunity for that, great. But if teams are going to continue to play soft zone coverage against you and keep a bunch of players and just kind of keep the umbrella over the top, you've got to take the simple stuff and you've got to let your playmakers do the heavy lifting, even if they're struggling to do some of that heavy lifting. And if you want to call that shot play to Christian Watson, that's fine. I think it's probably the wrong play call in that situation based on the looks that they got all game. You can call that, but Jordan has to have the wherewithal to say, hey, if it's not there, there are literally checkdowns baked into this, or I can always throw it away. And that's one of those where I get you had every intention of throwing it into that space to get it to Christian, to let him go make a play. That was not the time nor the place for that play. And it ends up costing them with a huge turnover in the game. So he has to be smarter about that. I think Matt has to be. I thought Matt was on tilt with the 4th-and-8 decision as well, to just go for it and not take the points in that situation. You know, you could tell, again, similar to what we just talked about, Jordan, you know that it was 3rd-and-3, 3rd-and-4, and they drew up a play or had a play, were designed to probably just pick up some yardage, at least pick up something. And if they were held short, we're going to go for it on 4th down. Or if it's incomplete, we're going to go for it on 4th down. But instead they move back 4 yards. And then not only is that, all right, it's 4th and 8, just kick the field goal. But at that time, like all of like Golden is out. I don't think Watson was in the game at the time. Like there's no Jaden Reed. There's no Tucker Kraft. There's no Dontavian Wicks. Like it's all like Romeo Doubs in backup. So it's also probably not the right time or the place to be aggressive. And then to like make matters even worse is the play clock's running down and your timeouts are very valuable and limited at that point in time. Just take the 5-yard delay a game, kick the field goal, take the 3 points and try to get the ball back and go down and score, hopefully a game winning touchdown. And instead they burn the timeout, still decide to go for it. Just a catastrophic error. And obviously the lack of 3 points there. Now, maybe McManus misses it anyway. We'll never know, but just a catastrophic error in that situation.
You know, I also thought that the play they ran, the little screen out to Wilson, or Merrick made a great play out there too, like blew up Malik Keith. But it was just like, I was like, I see Packers fans going another screen. And it's that kind of reminiscent of the Dallas game a little bit, where it's like, you know, you just have someone, blew up that play. And then, yeah, you have another play clock issue where you're like, what's happening here? And can LaFleur get this under control?
I don't mind some of the receiver and running back screens in a right place, right time. No matter what the team is, I hate them on have to have it situations, because it either works or it doesn't. There's no improvisation ability on that sort of play. You've got, you know, linemen that are getting downfield, even if you throw it and, you know, there's going to be an eligible man downfield sort of thing. It's either there or it's not. You're just hoping that it's going to be there. And so on a have to have it situation, you know, I just go back to my Madden days. I would never call a play, because if I throw that screen and they're there, or it's just, you know, what it's just over, there's nothing you can do about it. So I hate that for that reason. Now, and that play call, if we're going to diagnose the play call just really quick, Romeo's one-on-one on the backside. Yeah, I have no idea if Jordan even has the ability to throw that outside. I don't know if it's like a guaranteed we're throwing the screen here. I don't know if he's supposed to read that and say, do we want the screen or do we want the one-on-one? I'm not part of those meetings. I don't know the discussion. I don't know the play call, right? But I would have to think that when you get Romeo one-on-one on the backside, that in where Romeo is just completely cruised through those almost all season long, that's where you want to go on that play. He didn't. He threw the screen. That could just be a Jordan mistake. And maybe Matt had the right call. And if he goes to Romeo, it's an easy pickup there. I don't know. The other thing I'll say is, if they block it the way that it's supposed to,
it probably
picks up the yardage that it needs to, or at least gets you in like a fourth and inches, right? So I hate the play call. We just talked about it in the, you know, have to have it situation, but it could be that Jordan made the wrong read at the line, and the receiver and tight end certainly made bad blocks to execute it as well. So just, the play call sucks. The read might've sucked, and the execution sucked. Outside of that, everything was great.
No. And that's kind of what it turned into for the whole game. I mean, I'm just going over here again. Every single note I put down was just, you know, the Packers leaving points on the board or doing something to help Carolina. And we've had a lot of people jump in our comment section saying, or literally defending Carolina as being a good team. And I just don't think they're very good. You know, Bryce Young comes into this and throws for 102 yards and a pick. Yeah, you know, Rico Dowdle was amazing again. I guess he's just like, you know, decided to be Adrian Peterson. But other than Rico, like, this was a game that Green Bay really, if you play it again, I think that they probably do win by double digits. It's just, it's inexcusable to me, really. Like, you got to win these games if you want to be a Super Bowl contender. And for your guys' sake, hopefully you're not looking back on this going to LA in the first round as opposed to being the one seed. And it's like, Packer fans, I have to imagine, are just going to be losing their mind if we're heading into week 17 and 18. And they're not in control of their own destiny because of the Browns and the Panthers of all teams. It's just, yeah. People seem really pissed with LaFleur. that's
yeah. Oh, they are. Yeah. They are. Yeah. Inexcusable is the buzzword in Green Bay. And I'll just add, I talked about it going into the week. Teams that have got their ass kicked going into the week, like the prior week, they just got completely annihilated. They have improved, you know, massively the following week. Like, there's a lot of pride, especially early in the season with a lot of these teams left. You guys showed it against Detroit. You guys mentioned earlier, 27 point loss, I think it was, at the hands of the Chargers. And now you're going to Detroit. And everybody is looking at that being like, haha, good luck, Minnesota. You just lost by 27 to the Chargers. Now you're going to Detroit. Detroit, that's the easiest pick of the week. That's everyone's survivor pick. You're right. And if it's not that, what's the other one? The Bills just lost by 31, or sorry, the Panthers just lost by 31 to the Bills. Now they're going to Green Bay to play the Packers in Green Bay. Good luck, Carolina. Green Bay is going to just easily walk through that one. And it's just not the way that the league works right now. This is a week-to-week league, and it's one thing to say it, and every coach tries to preach it, but until you walk it and actually go into every game feeling like, hey, if we don't play our A game, we can get our butts kicked in this game. This is exactly what can happen. I think the Vikings game and I think the Packers game, just a huge, you know, example of that once again.
Yeah,
it does just feel weird to be talking about this of a head coach who's now been in Green Bay since 2019, right? It's not, I know coaching in the NFL was very hard. I certainly couldn't do it, but this is not some advanced arcane coaching tech of how do you have your players prepared to win games that they should be winning when you're chasing the one seed. At this point, you know, as an outsider, I'm wondering if things are ever going to get better, because it feels like there's not a lot of teams in the NFL for whom this is a problem week in, week out. But it is for Green Bay, 6 years in.
Ziggy, you were meant to be a Packers fan, my friend. That is the Packers fan. That is the Packers fan feeling, I think, that a lot of people are going through and experiencing through the course of this week and really this season so far. And I think the thing that everyone, myself included, and I think most Packers fans, is like, can you just go for the kill? Do you have a killer mentality? It just doesn't feel like this team has that killer mentality to be like, we're showing up, we're better than you, and we're going to show it for four quarters. It's like everything is just a grind, and it does not feel like this is the team that everything should have to feel like a grind. And it just is. And it's not the most aesthetically pleasing brand of football, and especially when you're hoping for better and expecting better. So it lives in this weird no man's land. And I'm saying, like, the Matt LaFleur Packers, where, man, you look at his regular season records and what he's accomplished and winning over and over every single year, going to the playoffs every single year but one, doing it, whether it was taking over after Aaron had shown maybe some signs of decline and things had gone really sour in the McCarthy years, to bringing him and having him win back-to-back MVPs, being the favorites in an NFC championship game at home in 2020, immediately having then to take a Jordan Love-led team following the exit of a legend and going to back-to-back and what should be back-to-back-to-back playoff appearances in three consecutive seasons with a new quarterback after Aaron Rodgers. Like, everything aesthetically feels like it should be like, what the hell is there to complain about? But when you don't win in the playoffs, when you go, like, at the end of last year, 0-3 to end the year. So I talked about this just to wrap this probably up. This is probably a good place to end Packers talk for the day. But I think the reason why the viewpoint is the way that it is in Green Bay is you're viewing this through three lenses. The first is you're viewing this through the lens of a team that went 0-3 to end last year and got their, you know, kind of their ass kicked in Philly, mm-hmm. Where that was never really a game. And Matt LaFleur's sort of postseason records in the past where they haven't been able to seal the deal. So the question kind of coming in is like, can this coach and can this team actually be good enough to win the big one? That's lens number one. Lens number two is that you go all in. We can call it for what it is. It's going all in to get Micah Parsons and to supercharge that Super Bowl run. With that comes insanely high expectations. That's lens number two. And then lens number three, for better or worse, you start the season with Washington or Detroit and Washington, and you look fantastic. You look fantastic for the first two games, and you get proof of concept of what this team can and should look like for the remainder of the year. It should only go up there's going to be hiccups, but should only go up from there, right? And now since then, you have, you know, had those same questions of like, can this team have the killer instinct? Can they win the big ones? Like, are they good enough? Same viewpoint as, again, the losses in the past. The Micah Parsons stuff, again, the expectations are Super Bowl. They're not playing like that. And it doesn't feel like they have that killer instinct. And it doesn't look anything like that Washington and Detroit game from earlier this season. So I think those are the lenses that it's viewed through. I think rightfully so. And right now, it doesn't look the way that it's supposed to through any of those lenses. We'll be right back. Hey friends, we've all gone through difficult times, whether it be with addiction, heartbreak, financial troubles, or hundreds of other challenging situations that get presented to us on a day-to-day basis. I know I certainly have, and if you have, just know you're not alone. And the thing is, taking care of your mental health shouldn't be harder than taking care of your physical health. If you pull a muscle, you go see a doctor. But when it comes to finding the right therapist, suddenly it's frustrating. You've got long wait lists or you're staring down huge out-of-pocket costs. That's what usually stops people from getting help. That's where Rula comes in. Rula makes therapy simple, affordable, and fast. They work with most major insurance plans, and the average session copay is just $15. Just 15 bucks. Every therapist on the platform is licensed, vetted, and picked for their expertise, so you know you're going to talk to somebody legit, not just whoever happens to be available. And getting started could not be easier. You answer a few quick questions about what matters to you, and Rula connects you with in-network providers who actually fit your needs. You pick the time, and you could be talking to a therapist as soon as the next day. I can't stress enough how much therapy has been a blessing in my life, and it can be in yours as well. And Rula gives you that opportunity without having to break the bank. Now, thousands of guys have already used Rula to finally get the care they've needed, so don't keep putting it off. Go to Rula.com/Packaday and get started today. That's RULA.com/Packaday. Take the first step, get connected, and take control of your mental health.
It almost feels like you guys just have these jolts, right? Other than maybe the 10-game stretch of love at the end of 2023, just for the past few years where it's like all of a sudden you feel great about Green Bay, and then the next week, sort of like, you know, this year exactly, then it's just like a bunch of confusion again. And I think you look around the other teams in the division and, you know, the Vikings, generally speaking, under O'Connell, just have a great feel to them. And the Lions under Campbell just have a really good feel to the organization and what they've built. And Green Bay, yes, they're probably the most consistent competitor of those teams, but it just feels like there's a little more like turmoil. Is that, do you feel that way?
I don't know if turmoil is the right word. It just feels like inconsistency. It just feels like they just can't find their rhythm.
Yeah, turmoil is not right. You're right.
Complimentary football. Something's just a bit off. And I think
just like the Chicago Bears.
But is that like, I'm looking at the schedule right now, guys, and I guess this is a good way that we could start going towards week 10. But, you know, the Packers, outside of that Giants game, and you said, Andy, that's still one that you can't just write off as a win.
Nope. That's what I'm most afraid of.
Yeah, you got the Vikings twice, the Bears twice, the Lions. So you got five division games, and then you got Philly, the Broncos, and the Ravens. Like, this is, you said it before, 5-2-1. You feel good right now about the record, but it just needs to, like, you really got to tighten up right here. And I can almost see a world where if this thing goes south, LaFleur's gone. Like that's kind of crazy, like, how negative that sounds. But with the way they've looked this year, the highs and the lows, this could be a team that, you know, they win these games, they're the one seed, and they're going to be the favorite to go to the Super Bowl. I can also see a world where if they drop one or two unexpected ones to the Vikings and Bears, let's say, like, there's a chance that they're, you know, floating around the wild card. And it's, I don't know, if you're a Packer fan, the feeling from last week against Pittsburgh to, and maybe I'm just fueling the fire a little bit too much right now. I probably am.
Well, first of all, again, Packers fans are going to be very happy to hear that, because that's, you know, there's a lot of talk this week about that LaFleur is not the guy. Get LaFleur out. This team's never going to win with LaFleur. I'm just very interested to see how the rest of the season is going to go. And listen, Matt would, I'm assuming, would be the first one to tell you of what expectations there are on this season. Also, he will never escape he's never going to win the big one unless he wins the big one, right? So even if they make a run to the Super Bowl or the NFC Championship and look great up until that point, if they lose that, then the next year it's going to be, well, yep, he's back and this is going to be this team, but, you know, he can't win the big one. It's just going to be the same conversation point, right? So, you know, with the expectations being what they are, if this team doesn't make the playoffs or has an immediate first round exit, similar to what we saw, or it wasn't competitive with Philly a year ago, there's going to be a lot of conversation, yeah, whether it's right or wrong. My guess is, unless he loses the locker room, he's going to be back next year, almost no matter what, would be if I just had to put my guess on it right now. I mean, Mike McDaniel's still a head coach right now. Like we just, like, it, teams are, I know in the offseason it's a little bit different, but man, like, unless you lose the locker room, especially in season, you're not getting fired usually until the offseason. And unless that happens, I think Matt will get another chance next year, but it will be all the heat will be so insanely hot if that ends up being the case. And if they don't make the playoffs again, then I think all bets are off, and what Green Bay decides to do from there, I think, is very interesting.
So real quick, before we do the week 10 game picks, at this point in time in Vegas, the Packers are still favored at +110 to win the division. The Lions are +125. Chicago now at +850 all the way down there. And then
850?
+850 for Chicago.
Wow.
Is that, let me just make sure I'm seeing. Yeah, 850.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And then if you, like, really dig deep, you find the Vikings at +1,500 to win the division. As it stands right now to you guys, what's the best bet there?
Yeah, I'll start. Chicago, no question. Like, just for the +850,
yeah,
for what I can win in that situation. And with Green Bay and, you know, Detroit just looking a little bit shaky at the moment, I want to be very clear. I'm not picking Chicago to win the division. I think they're, you know, whatever, wherever you want to place them, probably third or fourth in the division. I think he's probably right. But that, for the +850 on it, I think that's the bet that I would make if I had to make a bet on it.
I'm not in on Chicago at all. I think the injuries on the defense are just too much for them. The Odeyingbo injury is bad, and Joe Tryon, as much as I love him as a player, is probably not going to transform it. I still like the Packers there. I think they're still being undervalued.
Undervalued?
The team, if you can get the team with the most talent in the division at plus odds, I'm taking that all day. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, the Packers, I still believe, are the most talented team in this division. Will that win out over the coaching? I usually think yes, time will tell. But I just, the Packers have too much talent for me to not take them at plus odds.
I think I still lean Packers as well. I can't wait for that Thanksgiving. The winner of the Thanksgiving game might wind up just winning the division, because I think the Packers and Lions schedules are kind of similar. But Andy,
you beat us first.
You do have my attention with the Bears, and I was trying to sell Ziggy on this before. I'm not also not picking the Bears to win the division.
Right? No, I'm not picking them.
Yeah,
no,
we're not doing that.
Up.
But they got
8-1. 8-1 is like it would be an intriguing enough.
Guys,
play.
Joe Flacco just threw for 500 yards.
But wait, Ziggy, hear this out. If you're a Bears fan trying to find the path, you got the Browns, Steelers, and Giants at home. Okay, so you got those home games, and then sure, yeah, maybe you'll probably lose at Philly, maybe you lose at San Fran, although they're weird. The rest is all division games. Like, it's in front of you, where if you take care of business in the games you're supposed to win, the Bears will have an opportunity to win the division. Now, they'll probably lose. You know, they don't beat the Packers in those really big games. They usually flop. But it'll be there. And those will be the biggest Bears games in years. So I actually can see the world where it works out for Chicago.
I just think it's interesting. Like, plus 800. Like, and again, I'm not, I think the Bears are a tier below the Packers and the Lions. Don't get me wrong. Again, I'm very clear on that. They have the same record as the Lions and are a half game behind Green Bay, and you get 8-1 odds rather than basically 1-1 odds with everything else. Again, I don't think they end up winning it. I'd be pretty stunned overall if they did, and I'm probably just throwing my money away. But if I'm going to take a flyer,
it's
on something,
yeah,
I'm going to get the 8-1 odds. I'll take that.
And then, you know, you never know with plus 1500. I mean, if anyone's out there feeling a little risky and wants to put some faith in JJ McCarthy.
It would, like, in a way, like, if you had 300 to spend, and like, or whatever, you could obviously scale it down. You could do a dollar each if you wanted, but putting like 100 on like either Green Bay or Detroit, and then like 100 on Chicago and 100 on Minnesota, like, and you just have to get one of the four right. And if you hit Minnesota, you get 15-1, or at least in this case, 15-3. If you get Chicago, you get 8-3, and you lose, like, you know, 3-1 if you hit on one of the other ones. And I guess 3-0 if you miss the other one. But it's just like kind of like a weird bet hedging where you get some fun odds on Minnesota and Chicago while still having a little bit of a way to win your money back if you take one of the other ones.
We put a bet a couple of weeks ago. I threw out a bet to one of our friends who's a Lions fan, and it was a chat of a Lions fan, a Bears fan, and me. And I was, I can't remember what we were debating, but I said, you know what? How about it's me and the Bears fan versus you, the Lions fan. If the Bears or Vikings win the division, we get bumped up to best man in your wedding. And he's like, you know what, dude? I'll take any bet like that, because there's no shot in hell that you guys are going to win the division. And here we are now. The odds wouldn't favor us, but here we are a week and a half later, and it's like, maybe we'll be up there on the altar.
We'll see.
Okay, let's get into the game picks. We'll wrap up here. So week 10, and it really is a fantastic slate outside of the rest of the NFC North. But the NFC North games will start off Ravens at Vikings, the 1 o'clock game. You mentioned it, Andy, kind of has a real playoff feel, even though the teams are a combined, 6-9 on the year. Who are you guys taking?
Ziggy?
I know that the Ravens defense has been up and down, but they're healthy and the Vikings are healthy. Fully loaded Death Star, I'm taking the Ravens all day. Minnesota doesn't get it done.
You just don't sound like a Viking fan. Like, throughout the whole show.
If the Vikings pull off back-to-back wins against the Lions and the Ravens, maybe I don't pick against them for the rest of the season. But that's not happening. So I'm taking Baltimore.
I think this one ends up being closer than maybe what we feel, but I'm going to take Baltimore maybe by, I bet Minnesota covers, Baltimore wins.
Well, this is a familiar spot. This feels very similar to last week.
Ravens are only 3.5 point favorites, Paul.
It's 4.5.
You know, I'm not gonna mess with the good thing. I'm gonna take the Vikings in a shocking win again, and hopefully we can recreate that magic where Ziggy, you throw a little skull in here with me. I mean, come on, it's
sure
this best game of the year just a week ago. All right, so we'll see there. The Giants go to Chicago. I feel pretty good about the Bears in this one.
I'm getting a weird feeling about this. Jackson Dart versus Caleb Williams. Jackson Dart has the heart. Caleb Williams does not. I think the Giants go into Chicago and pull off a stunner.
The ESPN predictor has the Giants by 0.2% in this one. And the line's a sneaky, like just 3.5 for Chicago, which basically means they're even teams, but they're giving them the home field advantage almost. But I'm still taking Chicago, especially if I'm taking them like 8-1 to win the North. Feel like I have to, you know, I can't say the Giants are going to win this one, but yeah, I'll take the Bears slightly in this one by a field goal.
Yeah, the Giants. I mean, their defense and that D line has showed up a number of times this year, but with Neighbors and Scadaboo, the offense, it feels like the injuries have just caught up to that team. And next year might be a lot of fun. At least here,
you know what? I'm reversing it. Every time after you get like a big like end of season, like end of game, like crazy win, it feels like you come back to earth the following week. So you know what? I'm changing it. I'm going Giants. Giants are winning.
The letdown game?
Letdown game after the
Bears
win.
Are not putting up 600 yards again. It's not happening.
Caleb's playing a lot better. Like that's one another thing. Bears fans can start getting excited. Caleb looked really good. Now the Bengals defense sucks, but Caleb's playing better too. The next one, Lions at Commanders, and no Jaden Daniels.
No anybody.
Yeah, their no anybody.
Whole team got nuked. Their whole team got nuked in like this past week.
This is like everyone's the injury. This is the injury report game with the Lions, who also have a ton of injuries, just not as important as Washington's main one. But who you got, Ziggy?
I've got the Commanders winning this one. I think they're going to do a good job beating Green Bay. Things are going to be fine. Oh, wait. Oh, you said the Lions. The Lions are playing a bad team on the road. I'm taking Detroit all day. It's not even going to be close.
Oh, that's well done. Lead pipe lock. Lions big, double digits, coming off of a loss, pissed off. Washington having nothing to play for. Season's in the dumps. Lions easy.
Yeah, they are a season from hell team, the Commanders. I got the Lions too. And then Monday Night Football, just a massive game, no ways around it. And maybe that bodes well for you guys, Andy, because it seems the bigger the game, the better you guys have played this year. Eagles at Packers, Monday Night Football. Ziggy, who you got?
The Packers have more talent. They're playing a big game against a big team. They're always good in prime time. They're going to show up and take care of this one. I've got Green Bay winning, I think, by a decent amount.
Okay. Really?
Look, Saquon is a problem. I think if the Packers' run defense can just play well enough, it could be a blowout. I don't think that's going to happen, but I still think they win by a 1.5.
Andy, you I have to. Right. Yeah. How are you responding?
I hope that? You're right, is all I'll say. Packers by a point. I don't feel good about it.
The Eagles, so they've added, what, Michael Carter this week? They added Jalen Phillips, right? And who is the...
And Jair Alexander.
And Jair returns. Game. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and Jair returns.
Captain? Or does he just make himself a captain for the game?
He'll just walk out to the field.
That'd be the best.
He should do that. I mean, that would just be hysterical. I'm going to go Philly. I want to pick the Packers for you guys, but no, I really don't. I dislike the Eagles more. I forgot. We ranked the teams I hate, Andy, and the Eagles came in at number two, Green Bay number three. So I really wouldn't mind the Saints. 2009 scarred me as a
that
child.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And I know they've been bad for a long time, and that actually plays into the eternal misery wish that I wished upon them right after they that football game that we don't need to talk about. But I'm going to go Philly. Yeah, Saquon is a problem, Ziggy. You're very right. And Rico Dowdle just went for what, like 130 against Green Bay. I think AJ
he's
Brown.
He's having a better year than Saquon. Maybe he's just the better player.
Maybe he is. Who knows at this point? Rico's been unreal. But AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, there are so many weapons. I think it'll be a great game. I'm not anticipating Philly coming in there and dominating them. But I think Jalen Hurts is going to make just enough plays on third down where I feel like him on third down, he gets out of the pocket and makes things happen. You'll see a few tush pushes. I think it'll be a really fun one, but I'm going to go Eagles in a nail biter. I'm sorry about that, Andy.
No, I could easily see it. Even just as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, the Eagles are probably going to win this game. But
on the field for both. Ziggy, I know you said the Packers are the more talented team. I'm not totally sure about that. I might even disagree with you.
It's going to be fun. I hope it's a great game. Obviously, I hope the Packers win from a Packers standpoint, but from an NFL standpoint, it should be an unbelievable game. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
I'm thinking how would you think the crowd's going to come out, Andy?
They'll be fired up. The Packers fans in stadium will have. All Green Bay has to do is give them something to cheer about early, and they'll be good to go. If it starts off like Philly gets the ball first and scores a touchdown, it's going to sound like a funeral in there until Green Bay gives them something to cheer about. So just depends on what happens early in that game.
And I just want to throw this out there because we mentioned it. The other games this week, you got Patriots at Bucks, which should be awesome. Jaguars at Texans is sneakily kind of important.
AFC South game.
I have no idea how Jacksonville is 5-3. Rams 49ers. Which we mentioned, which could, you know, have massive division implications later down the line. And Steelers Chargers, which both those teams, we'll see if Baltimore catches Pittsburgh, could be really big for wild card standings too. So it's an awesome slate this Sunday. After it feels like a couple weeks of some lame games, we're finally back to an awesome week of football. So.
All right. Even Browns Jets has number one pick,
right.
implications overall. So not only the best teams, but the worst teams battling it out as well. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So it should be exciting. And, the game of the week to cap it off is Monday Night Football. So that'll be fun. Any closing thoughts? Anything you guys want to get off your chest? I mean, Andy, it felt like a good therapy session for you, which Ziggy and I are good at those. We're good at helping people through these
it
times.
It is. And Ziggy's got, a lot of respect for the Packers, and he's uplifting me, telling me how talented they are. So I needed a little bit of that today. So thank you, Ziggy. I appreciate it.
If there's one thing Vikings fans specialize in, it's delusion. I've got you covered.
All right, we'll wrap it up. I mean, Ziggy, this is a great week to end with our...
Wait. I have an idea. I think I figured this out because Packers fans don't want to see the skull, right? And Vikings fans don't want to hear me end with Go Pack Go. So do you trust me with an outro today?
I think I know what you're going to go with.
All right. For Paul Farrington, actually this way. For Paul Farrington, for Robert Ziggy Ziegler, my name's Andy Herman. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back in a week. But until next time, and as always, the Bears still suck.